This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. How does the new normal impact us, and what does the future look like? To discuss all that and more, we're joined by Kathy Borshuk, professor of psychology at Indiana University South Bend. Welcome back, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks, Miriam.
Let's start with this new normal. We keep hearing that we're now living in the new normal. What does that look like?
Well, post-COVID, we've got a whole different context, a little bit of a different situation for everybody. One thing is that we do interviews like this now. I do everything like this. We had a slight snow day at the university today, so I taught my class on Zoom. We don't have to be in each other's presence anymore. And that's been a real boon for a lot of people, I think. Even the aging parts of the population seem to be picking up how to Zoom, how to FaceTime, how to do their work in a remote fashion, how to continue conversations and communications with one another, even though we don't have to be physically present. And I think the adoption of new technologies has been a real positive for a lot of different groups. There are people who have a hard time getting places, people who might have chronic illnesses or disabilities. We see in a Pew survey that just came out that there's a lot of new data about the people who are preferring now to work from home. And I think that's a new normal that we can trace directly to the pandemic.
Yeah, I was thinking just for myself, I always thought I'm kind of a social person, you know, I like seeing people, but then the pandemic made me feel like actually I like being at home. And so that's been kind of interesting, is just seeing the changes. And I wonder if more people are feeling less like they want to socialize outside of their homes if they don't have to.
I'm not sure about the socializing. I think people are maybe, if nothing else, finding new ways to socialize, or are socializing with different people or a smaller group of people. For working and those sorts of things, I think there's just so many more opportunities now. By working from home, you have the costs of working that go down. You're not commuting, maybe. You're not paying for gas and for meals. Again, I'm in front of my computer today with a fancy blouse and sweatpants on. There are things that are fun about and preferable about being remote, being online, being virtual, one might say. There's just better opportunities for work-life balance. I wonder if what you're referring to is maybe the inner introvert is coming out for some of us. I always consider myself an extrovert, but I too really enjoy staying home, wearing what I want to wear, eating when and what I want to eat, not having to schedule and regiment my life, what time I'm leaving, what time I'm getting home. There are some real benefits. It's not perfect for everybody, but some studies are actually showing even remote workers are more productive, even though I should tell you too, remote workers report working longer hours, and that might be why they're being more productive. They're just spending more time at it.
When I have been working from home, I definitely feel more productive because it's less time. Like, I don't have to get up extra early to get ready, to go to work, to find a parking spot, and all of that. It's just, don't tell anyone this. Roll out of bed in my pajamas and get on the air.
I won't tell anyone.
So how can we handle this new normal? For some people, it might be a really hard transition, and maybe they're not enjoying this.
Yeah, it's true. Being on Zoom all day is physically draining, physically, just hard to sit in a chair all day without moving and staring and smiling into a camera. You know, actually moving is a good thing for the human body, and personal interaction is good for people too. I also enjoy personal interaction, and being home for long periods of time can lead to isolation. And we know that isolation exacerbates things like anxiety, burnout. We can't deny that we're in a bit of a mental health crisis in the country right now. Whether we can say that's all due to the pandemic and the new normal, it's hard to say, to really, you know, point to cause and effect. But no question, our new ways of doing things have led to people being more isolated, more individual, and more nervous about being out. There's a lot of anxiety about venturing out for a lot of people. It's not great for everybody to be remote working. We have found that there are the inequalities that already exist in the workplace, like racial inequalities and gender inequalities, those actually become worse for remote workers. You just don't have enough FaceTime. in the workplace, maybe you become more overlooked by the employer or the boss. Your opportunities for getting to know people, for making a name for yourself, for networking, for being mentored, those are all challenges for those who are working remotely. And as I said, when there's already inequalities in the workplace, that can make things even tougher for people.
What are the best ways to cope in these types of situations? Are there any steps folks can take?
I like the creativity that we're seeing out of people. Early in the days of the pandemic, I don't know if you remember this or ever participated, Miriam, but me and my friends had something we called quarantinis, which was an evening of social interaction. Whether we had cocktails or not, it was seeing people whose faces we were missing. So we have become a little bit more creative about how we socialize. There are still folks who are not confident about going out, let's say, to meet somebody for drinks after work or for gathering at the local pub to watch a sports game. And there are technology-enabled ways we can do that that are a little bit more creative than we might have thought. But other methods of coping, there are more people seeking counseling and mental health services now than we have ever had before. In fact, the profession that is experiencing probably the most burnout is the counseling profession. So a lot of folks are coping by seeking out somebody to talk to. And I actually think that's a wonderful thing, given that I'm a psychology professor, because it shows that we are starting to destigmatize mental health issues. More people are online. What do we call it? Very online, fully online, always online. I just did a Pew survey. Whenever I look something up on a survey site, I feel like I owe them some time. So I do a survey too. And the survey that I saw asked the question, how often do you get on online? And one of the answers was almost continually. And I thought, wow, for some segments of the population, they are in fact almost continuously online. And a lot of that is social media, social networking, talking with other people, finding people in other places in the world with whom you might have similarities. And that's another way of coping, is simply finding your community in a place that is not face-to-face, finding a community that might exist all scattered all over the world, but now you have the opportunity to really connect. Now, that's not new, and that's not just because of the pandemic, but for those who are feeling isolated, that's a really a beneficial way of coping, is to reach out to those who are similar.
I'm just thinking what we would have done if we didn't have access to the internet or TV or any of these things in a pandemic. I think that's definitely been a huge plus. And I know not everybody has access to these things, but for those that were able to access it, it must have been a relief.
I think so. You know, we've seen our doctors through telehealth appointments. People are doing online counseling, online support groups. I should mention, part of the new normal is a lot of people are in mourning since the pandemic. I believe the United States is inching close to reporting a million Americans have died of coronavirus since this began in just 2 years. Most of those are within the last year as well. That means we have a lot of people who are grieving. There's more than 21,000 Hoosiers who have lost their lives to COVID. That, you know, just think about the ripple effects of every death, means that there are dozens of people for each loss who are really impacted, sometimes permanently impacted by their loss. Too many families have been touched by the pandemic in the worst way imaginable. And that impacts all parts of yourself, your social aspect, your thinking, how you feel in your body, your physical abilities, how well you can do your job, whether you want to see people, how do you interact with others. And that's a secondary catastrophe that I think we don't talk about as much as we talk about the folks who are testing positive and the folks who are ill and the folks who are in the ICU or the folks who are quarantining. We haven't talked nearly as much in our culture because we don't talk as much about grief. But I think that's another new normal, is we really at some point are going to have to come to terms with the huge losses that we've experienced.
It's got to be tough to be dealing with these types of tragedies. And then I'm just assuming you go out and you see people just living life like there's no pandemic. That's got to have some kind of an impact.
Yeah, from what I've seen and talked to and people in grief groups, that's been a real issue for them, is having to watch, you know, whether it's a family member or a very close friend get very ill or pass away because of coronavirus, and then listen to those who may say it's just a flu, it's not a big deal, we shouldn't change our behavior because of it. And that can be really hurtful, really painful for those who are experiencing loss. No question.
You mentioned there's also sort of added nervousness or anxiety for folks these days when they're going out. And I'm just thinking, when I go out, sometimes I get frustrated when I see people without masks, and I'm trying to keep it to myself, but it's like this new habit I've developed. I'm like, before I never cared about this stuff. And now it's like, you instantly feel like you're becoming this judgy McJudgerson.
Well said. I like that. You know, not only that, we've developed a whole new language that we didn't have before. We talk confidently about things like epidemiology and variants and, you know, R-naught factors and things that we knew nothing about a couple of years ago. And now we're all experts on masks and, you know, all of these sanitizers and things like that. So it really has changed the way we approach the world. And also, I mean, we need to acknowledge that people's individual risk assessments vary drastically from person to person. So while you may be going out with your mask or double masked in the case of an active variant going through your community, there are just as many people in some places who are saying, in Indiana in particular, we see this, just as many people who are saying, it's not that serious, we don't need to take precautions. So we have this very, very different approach to how many accommodations people are making for the virus. Some people have been working on site the entire time, visiting their friends and relatives the entire time, traveling, eating out, going places. In fact, only about half of, I think I'm right about this, only about half of Hoosiers are vaccinated against the virus. And then there are others who have engaged in really different risk assessments and are still social distancing for various reasons, may still be isolating, avoiding places. I know many people who have not traveled or are not yet ready to think about getting on an airplane. People are still masking, even in situations where they are not mandated to mask, are still limiting opportunities for social gatherings in person. Winter is hard, of course, the winter time in these northern regions where you can't just say, hey, let's all go hang out outside and have a barbecue. So there are people who are actually, I think, still really feeling the effects and also wondering how others in their community are responding, given these widely varying levels of risk assessment that people are doing.
Coming up, we'll continue our conversation with Kathy as we understand more about the human experience and the new normal brought on by the pandemic. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're spending the hour speaking with Kathy Borshuk, professor of psychology at Indiana University South Bend, about the new normal. Did the pandemic reveal that we have such a wide range of risk assessment? Is this like been this global wide scale data that we've been able to see?
Yeah, I think that's very much the case, both very locally, like here in our state, across the country, and if we do international kinds of comparisons, we can look at a nation like New Zealand making different decisions than the United States or even as close as Canada. We see that on a national level, governments are engaging in different kinds of risk assessments. I have friends in Chicago, friends in Los Angeles, friends in New York who talk about, you know, still being cautious when they go out and wearing masks. Very often, if I go out here in where I live in northern Indiana, I may be the only person wearing a mask that I see. So we do see that reality that's, you know, based on so many different things, but this kind of risk assessment partisanship, we could say. And we have to coexist with one another, those who are very nervous still about going out and those who have never really thought that this was a very big deal. It's kind of a different reality, people living in different realities or different experiences while we all continue to deal with COVID, because like it or not, there are still thousands of people dying per day of this virus. I think we're still at 2,000 or 3,000 in the country still dying every day of this. So it's very hard I think to hear on the one hand, we've got to get back to the new normal. We've got to rip off the masks. We need to get out there and hug our neighbors and be all back into our social and professional lives. And at the same time, for instance, my granddaughter was just or just tested positive for coronavirus. And although I know that children are pretty low risk of getting seriously ill, I know she feels terrible, says it stinks, and is lying on the couch wrapped in a blanket. So, you know, when it comes close to home, of course, we start thinking a little bit differently too.
Has the definition of the new normal become one where we just ignore that there's a virus going on? I mean, people say we need to learn to live with it, correct? But is that part of the new normal where we're just numb to it now? It's happening, but we're so used to it. It's like, is it really happening?
Everybody is sick to death of hearing about it. When the semester started here in January, I tried to have the whole first class, the first day of class, not saying the word COVID. It was not possible. I'm sick to death of talking about it. We're all tired of requirements of various types on my campus. At Indiana University, there is a mask and a vaccination mandate. So this is something that we all live with on an everyday basis when we come to study or go to school or go to work. Many school kids are still in school systems that are required to wear masks, and they're getting sick of it. My husband has a beard and says it's really itchy to wear a mask all the time if you have a beard. I take his word for that. There's a lot of different ways that people are kind of at the end of their patience, I think, with this. And you can completely understand just the human impulse to get back to what they thought of as the new normal. But I think, you know, in our conversation today, we've come to the conclusion that for many people, there won't be a new normal. There are people, as I said, with chronic illnesses that are never, while the coronavirus still floats around in whatever way it floats around, I don't think they're going to feel particularly comfortable necessarily going into a big event. You know, we had people who put off their weddings, for example, for a year, for 2 years, and finally just said, oh, the heck with it. Let's do it, but let's do it differently. Let's do it more carefully. Let's have half the people at my wedding that I would have had at my wedding anyways. So some people are adapting, but we still live in the era of the possibility of super spreader events. So we can't just forget about that. I don't think my personal risk assessment is such that we can't pretend it's all gone yet. Not while I still see thousands of my fellow Americans dying per day. It's really hard to live in a bubble and say, well, it's over, it's done, let's get back to how things used to be. And more I'm hearing people use the phrase the before times to mean before the pandemic, before this awareness that something could just pop up out of nowhere, out of somewhere, but seemingly out of nowhere, and take over every facet of our lives. It seemed unimaginable at the time, but now we know something like this could happen. We have to come to terms with the fact that no, we can't control every aspect of our life. No, we can't control whether or not a loved one takes the same precautions that we want them to take, that maybe we will. We can't control who gets sick, not completely. Too many of us have lost people and are living in a state of, as I said, bereavement. And it's very difficult to even imagine what it's going to be like in a year. I want to plan a trip to Paris. I very much want to take my granddaughter on that promised trip to Paris. She might be 25 before we get around to doing that. But you know, I would say in general, if we continue to see right now we're on a downslope, you know, thankfully, and if we continue to see numbers of cases go down and fewer people dying, and not another very virulent variant around the corner, probably everybody's risk assessment will change a little bit anyway, and we might find ourselves going back to the theater or the airport. Again, that's, you know, there are even all these online apps and websites where you can do your own personal risk assessment. How old are you? What kind of underlying conditions do you have? How comfortable do you feel? How often do you wear a mask? And it will say it's really high risk, you know, based on the calculations, really high risk for you to go, to the mall, or moderate risk to go to the gym, or whatever those sorts of things are. You know, a very easy kind of calculation can do that. I should say, as humans, we're not very good rational thinkers. I mean, that's something widely known in psychology and economics. We don't tend to be rational thinkers. We don't tend to make good calculations, mental calculations, not like a machine does. We have too many heart factors in there to do a good machine-like calculation. So I might be very, very cautious about many things, but darn it, I need to hug my granddaughter, and that really is important, and that really matters to me. So I might make a little bit of a different calculation because of matters of the heart and our social factors that we can't get away from. We're social beings.
Isn't that though what leads to the spread factor where, you know, I just got to see my friend. I haven't seen them in so long, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm positive, and now I'm spreading it.
I know. And it seems to me like that was part of the problem, actually, with regards to the communication from the public health people. I mean, just the idea that we can just tell you what the numbers are and what this factor is and what that factor is, and everybody's going to come to the same conclusion, make the same decision. We are not scientific calculated machines again, right? We need to have information that takes into account the realities of our very human lives. I miss my coworkers, or I need to hug my friend, or I need to get out there, or I want to get married, or whatever it might be. You know, just t giving us statistics does not necessarily help us to make good decisions about things like that. What if you really need to see your mom who lives on the other side of the country and she's not feeling well, and it's not COVID related, but she could really use your support right now? How do you make that decision? You're going to really be factoring in the strength of the relationship and how much need she has of you. And CDC stats and figures and flowcharts don't really help us with that very well.
Yeah, I think there's this need for human connection, human touch that you just can't get from the online world. And I think when you do risk assessments, sometimes it's like, is the quality time with this person more valuable than, you know, being online? But
Definitely.
I guess it's hard.
Definitely.
You know, everybody has to make their own sort of decision on that. And something that I'm thinking about is with the pandemic, I think many of us develop maybe new habits, lifestyles. We're adapting. Maybe we're becoming healthier by walking every day because now we have the time. We're working remote. How do we keep up with that? And are there things that you've seen folks adapting with that should be kept up?
Well, I will deflate this bubble by telling you that all the available evidence shows that we're actually in worse physical shape than we were before the pandemic. We have gained weight. We have become more slothful. We have not worn pants. We have lost. We
Yeah, I don't
have
think I can fit
lost
into
some.
my jeans.
Right? Yeah. You know, what's the purpose of jeans to tell us? Give us information about our waistband. Folks have given up on many habits that were maybe designed to keep them functioning in a like a daily regime. You know, you had your alarm clock that told you what time you had to get up to get ready to go somewhere, to leave the house, to plan your workout, and everything was pretty carefully scheduled. For many people, that kind of went to hell during the pandemic, as well as the uncertainty, the fear, the anxiety, I think moved a lot of folks to talk about, at least I could see, talk about self-care, not necessarily self-care in the way that we used to do it in a regimented kind of day in which we scheduled a workout in there and we scheduled this and that. Instead, it was the kind of self-care, I need to take more baths. I need to wrap myself in a blanket. There is a real, as our mental health went down, there was an increase in downloads of things like meditation apps. There's a turn towards mindfulness as a practice. I think that's a positive thing. Folks have tried to do, I think, from what I'm seeing, have tried to follow, you know, yoga on online, on YouTube, workouts, that sort of thing. But there's a, I think any major gym will tell you that there's been a drop off in membership that has not rebounded, even with, you know, the January 1st resolutions in early 2022. Membership still has not really rebounded. So maybe we're starting to think of self-care in different ways rather than tightly controlled and highly regimented. On Saturdays, I do spin class, and on Sundays, instead, it may be more, I'm going to give myself a break. I'm not going to be so hard on myself. I'm going to doing something to engage my senses, whether it's lighting a candle, cooking a fantastic meal. Certainly, people are drinking more. We know that since the beginning of the pandemic. People, and it's not just, you know, folks experimenting with fancy cocktails. It might be a self-medicating or a coping mechanism, and not one that folks in my profession think is a particularly helpful or useful coping mechanism. Self-medication. People are smoking more pot. We know that as well. But I should say some positive things as well. I mean, folks are turning towards their communities too, and it may be that we have a little bit more time. We know there's the great resignation, right? Folks leaving their jobs in our present economic situation. People can hold out sometimes for better positions. They can say, I deserve more money. I don't have to take this kind of employment difficulties or abuse or whatever it may be. And I'm hoping that represents that people are looking out for themselves and others a little bit more closely and saying, you know, anything could happen at any time. I don't think I necessarily want to end it, you know, to end my life working in a place that is really not healthy for me and spending all my time commuting. Maybe there are other options, and some of those other options might be to turn inward, take care of myself, learn how to manage my mental health, do some mindfulness, learning about meditation, and also turning towards my community. We saw a rise in mutual aid during the pandemic, a little bit more awareness of what our neighbors are going through. And also, I would stress this, a little bit more awareness that people's fates are not always in their hands. In other words, if somebody's out of work or can't get to work or is in a tight spot financially, it's not because they don't want to or they're lazy. Instead of making those kinds of attributions, we may be now more likely to assume, well, gosh, it's because of this pandemic and people are struggling and we need to help each other out. So I think that's a positive. I see that increase in community-mindedness as a positive benefit.
I mean, I totally relate to mindfulness and self-care. The pandemic for me made me more forgiving for myself. Like, okay, you know what? I'm going to take some time to enjoy this and not feel guilty about, you know, binging on a show in the evening. But before, it was like I felt like I had to accomplish something in order to be able to do that.
Absolutely. Going a little easier on ourselves. Also, we're not really in the surveillance context anymore. If you're working from home, there's not somebody watching whether you eat, you know, 15 cookies every afternoon. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. That's when I eat my 15 cookies is in the afternoon. But if I can do it at home, nobody's judging, right? So there's a little bit more of that. I don't have to look like I'm working every single moment because I'm not part of the surveillance economy now. I can make sure I get my work done when I need it done. And also maybe I'll get to have a bath or throw in a load of laundry or help my kids with their homework in the meantime. So work-life balance, as we were talking about a few minutes ago, I think that goes into that self-care too, saying, yeah, I need to do this. Also, we've seen people doing all sorts of creative things. Many more people are quitting jobs now to make their hobby or their creative endeavor into a job. And I really love to see that. Folks just looking for different kind of fulfillment. And I'm not sure whether it's because they're looking around and seeing a new way of working, or they're just thinking that life could be short. Things could happen. This is my one opportunity to live in the way that I think is my best life.
Yeah, I think it's definitely highlighted those things for a lot of us, just to slow down and pay attention. And again, the mindfulness, being present in the moment, before, you know, so many activities and things, and everyone's vying for your time. And we still have the people trying to take our time on social media and streaming services. My weakness is like, oh, let me watch this. Wait, should I watch another one? But aside from that, just being more present with family and friends and the quality time in those experiences, I wonder, are there things that we should be paying attention to good habits that have come out of this that we were not doing pre-pandemic that we should continue with moving forward?
One of the new watchwords is slower and simpler. So slow things down a little bit. You don't have to get everything done immediately, right? As you just said, paying a little bit more attention to where your attention is. That's the whole point of mindfulness, being present with what you're doing. So slowing things down, and that really includes your thinking too. Slow thinking is going to result in better work, better productivity, better decisions, and also simpler. So if we're working a little bit and living a little bit more slowly, you know, appreciating what's around us, think of simplicity as well. People have gotten rid of, you know, big 40 or 50 or beyond birthday parties and opted for something slower, more intimate, something simpler to celebrate family life, to celebrate oneself. I don't need to gift myself with something really super fancy. It could be a walk around the block. It could be some quiet time. It could be some time with a close friend, really listening to them. Could be something that really sort of feeds your soul and you find satisfying. So I think new habits of going slower and living life a little bit more simply in order to still achieve the same kind of satisfaction. And as you said, the internet, social media, and streaming services don't necessarily help with that. But again, I would point out it's winter in Indiana, you know? So instead of a barbecue tonight, maybe wrapping yourself in a blanket, having some hot cocoa, and watching yet another episode of What Are You Streaming? Emily in Paris.
Oh, that's such a good show.
Might be just the thing in order to kind of slow down and see that there can be some satisfaction in, you know, in doing things simply.
Speaking of shows like that, I think those help us escape that we're in this pandemic. And I'm like, everybody's living their life. They're not masking. They're going out to eat. What was that like? I don't remember.
Somebody gets to go to Paris at least. Good.
Back after a quick break. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're speaking with Kathy Borschuk today, professor of psychology at Indiana University South Bend, about the new normal and what the future looks like. Do you think folks have become more focused on quality time with folks and how they're dividing their time? Is there anything that you've seen in that area?
Oh, I think that's definitely a possibility. No, certainly not for everyone. But I think, all it takes is being apart from your loved ones, an imposed period of time where you can't see your parents, where you can't see your grandkids, where you can't see your community members who matter a lot to you. That's all it takes to really redirect our attention to what really matters. And those relationships are very important to us. And it's very easy to take things like that for granted when they're there all the time. But when we are being kept apart, as we were early in the pandemic, people were reluctant to travel or told to shelter in place. I think that really kind of did a lot to make people realize the value of those relationships and what really matters, how important that is. And that's certainly different from material acquisition. There are a lot of people who have lost jobs, of course, as well. And that makes it difficult in terms of being materialistic. And then there are those who have kept their jobs and have stopped going out for dinner 3 times a week or traveling or whatever they were doing. So they may even have more savings. So it could provide more of a sense of security. Once we have a stronger sense of security, people are less likely to be sort of randomly materialistic. We do know that a lot of the desires to accumulate, to grab, to build up with material goods seems to stem from feeling some kind of insecurity. So it's actually for those who have been able to add to their savings, that can help them to feel like I've got enough, everything's good. And especially, you know, for those who have taken the time that they've had to go through their homes, their apartments, their closets, the trunk of their car, and seeing all the accumulated stuff that we just have already. I believe that thrift stores and places like Goodwill have been the happy recipients of a lot of us cleaning out our stuff. And after a while, you know, you do come to a point where how much more stuff can I get? Do I need, right?
Yeah, I think also just the awareness that we have about, you know, working from home, if you have you're able to do that, you don't need a whole wardrobe, right? So you're like, okay, I think I have way too many clothes. Do I really need this many clothes? Like,
sure.
And it's, I'm thinking about how I reflect also on things that, you know, spending for lunch at work,
yes,
or all of these things. And I'm just like, wow, I can't believe how much money, yes, I would waste. I mean, it was good food, but you know, I can make it at home.
Yeah, sure. Exactly right. Yeah. That has made a big difference. I think there is a cost of going to work, as all the financial planners will tell you, the costs of working, the commuting, the gas, the meals, the clothes, the wardrobes, the meeting up with people after work, all of that certainly does add up. And that's why I said, I think for some have seen a happy benefit of that in their savings. And that can really provide a sense of security. It's like, oh, maybe I will be able to retire someday, or maybe I am okay for this moment. And that helps to refocus people onto what do I really value in life? What's really important to me in life? Very often the answer to that is the relationships that I have, or the relationships maybe that I need to mend, or the relationships I've lost and need to mourn. So more time, having more time to do those things is a good thing. One thing I don't know, Miriam, if people have done more, if this is part of the new normal, and something I promise I will look into it, is the question, are people reading more? Mm-hmm. Are books selling more? Are there more books on tape or more Kindle downloads? Are libraries more, are they busier? And that's something I'd be very interested to find out. Of course, if we're cocooning in a pandemic in an Indiana winter, I wonder if we're streaming more than we're reading, or what's happened to that habit. Because, you know, for generations and generations, that has been the recourse to people who want something to do. They've read, they've spent their evenings with books. And we know that habit has certainly experienced a decline since the age of TV, and then of course streaming services and the internet. So I'm very interested to know if books are selling more than would have been expected. That's something I'll look into.
And anecdotally, because I don't have any data or information aside from the people that I've talked to, but I've been hearing a lot more people are listening to books on tape. And I tried to start doing that, but maybe I'm old school. I like having that book in front of me and turning those pages.
Yeah, me too. I've tried all the other varieties and I'm back to books. They don't break if you drop them, for one thing.
That's right? A good point.
Yeah. My niece taught me that.
One thing I was wondering about, we talked about sort of the mourning during this pandemic that some people have been going through. Yeah. Is there also a mourning of our old life before things changed?
Yeah, I think there's a collective acknowledgement of what we have lost. Not necessarily that we thought it was a great thing, but how quickly our society, our habits, our individual lives, our relationships can change. Almost instantaneously, things changed. And if maybe we're nostalgic for the before times, or maybe it's just a growing recognition that things beyond our control can come and do this to us again. That is a humbling recognition for me, for all of us as human beings. It's humbling to say, through absolutely no control of my own, my life changed drastically. You can mourn that loss of control, that dawning recognition that anything can happen at any time. It's a realization that I think denotes some sort of maturity and acceptance of life. But I can certainly understand why there would be a sadness for the feelings that we had before, that I was in control of my Monday through Friday and sometimes my weekend too. And I knew what I was going to do and I was making my own decisions about life. And suddenly we're turning to everywhere to make our decisions for us. And who's deciding when we can go out? And is it the grocery stores? Is it the public health officer? Is it the people on cable TV? Is it our governor? Who decides these things of what we're able to do and when? And none of us had a choice in that. And I think to some degree, we really mourn that belief, or maybe it was just an illusion, that really, we really were in control of every aspect of our life. Now we know that's not true, and anything can happen again at any time. That's a pretty serious recognition.
I look at pictures from the before times, and I can't believe it's been 2 years. I feel like it was just yesterday. I feel like I'm in this time loop where it's still 2020. Yeah. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because I still haven't seen people in a work setting. It's all been online. And so it's like the life stopped, everything went online, and it's not gone back to anything else. So I'm kind of like in this stuck position. But the one thing I will say that I think about sometimes when I look at pictures from the before times is like, I wish I took more advantage of the time that I had. And that's something that I'm trying to do now. And I wonder if this is something a lot of people are facing, just trying to make the present life and the future life better.
We have a saying where I work, and the saying is make it matter. How you spend your time, what you do, the interactions that you have with others, make it matter, not just something that you sleepwalk through, right? This is my big thing, is let's make sure we're not just sleepwalking through our interactions with people we love. Let's not just sleepwalk through our job because we have to get paid, so we'll just do anything or do it or whatever. Let's not just sleepwalk through our days and nights endlessly scrolling kind of thing. Let's kind of try to be present, to really be putting all of ourselves into what we're doing. And I'm not sure if that's exactly what you're talking about, but it's certainly part of the whole slowing down. Now, you're one of the people, and there are still quite a few who have not gone back to their original place of work, to their workplace. I know a lot of folks who have not seen the inside of an office building in 2 years, and their lives are starting to feel permanently changed. I have friends saying, I don't know if I'll ever go in that building. I wonder, do they even heat and air condition it anymore? Have my plants all died? And, well, yeah, I can tell you your plants have all died. It's the only thing we know for sure. So, you know, how do you accept this going forward? I would just say, think of it in a way that you can make it matter, make what you do have an impact, right? Going forward. And the problem, of course, is we can't predict where we're going. None of us can. That next variant, you know, I try and follow this pretty closely. That next variant could be around the corner. I don't know, right? And so even at this very moment where it feels maybe a little bit safer, maybe you might think about going somewhere that you didn't in early January, and you may not again in May. We just have not been great at predicting what's the next thing that's going to happen. And I count in there, even our public health officials haven't been great, it seems to me, at predicting what's around the corner, what's going to happen next. Is this over? Is this not over? What do we do now? So I think we can only make what matters here in this moment, because we can't predict what's going to happen next. And those 2 years that went by just like that, that's how fast life goes by. Let's make sure we understand and respect that it goes by so quickly.
Many of us have changed during these last 2 years, hopefully for the better. One thing I've been thinking about is, how do people reconcile their old selves with their new selves? Because, you know, this was 2 years of being able to slow down and focus on what matters in your life. And then you may have changed in drastic ways, perhaps, or you've taken on challenges or changed your career or what, you know, a whole slew of things. How do you balance that?
Well, life is about changing. Life is about transitions. But we were kind of forced to make a bunch of decisions rather quickly, weren't we? Small ways. For instance, a lot of women on the other side of my age and the other side are no longer dyeing their hair because they went a whole year without going to the hairdressers. And that's pretty superficial maybe, but we see each other now and acknowledge that a different decision has been made about what we think is an important way to spend our money, what's an important way to invest in ourselves. So there's small things like that. But I think those changes, the way we reconcile them is by really paying attention to what are those changes and why have we made them? Have we made them or have they been made for us? What type of how much control can we exercise over the changes that are happening to us? As I just said, so many changes have been out of our hands. How are we able to say, this is important to me, this matters to me, this is something I'm consciously deciding about? I am not going to have 100 friends that I try to keep up with anymore and answer every single text message that comes in. Maybe I'm going to really kind of redevote myself to a small handful of people. I've suddenly, you know, in the last little while for various reasons, reconnected with a bunch of friends from graduate school days, which is over than 20 years ago, long ago and far away, because all of a sudden we're like, hey, we can Zoom and see each other anytime. Why didn't we ever do this before? So sort of the reconnection, the being very mindful about who are the people you're going to put time into, also evaluating relationships, people sheltered in place or quarantined or pandemicked, as they say, with a significant other, and found that that relationship became very intense, either for good or for ill. Relationships have deepened, have strengthened. Other relationships have been exposed as harmful, as abusive, as unnecessary. People have walked away from relationships in a conscious way, realizing that this is not how I want to go forward. I don't think change is bad. I think the way that we've changed, you know, is inevitable in many cases. Life goes on. Sometimes people do not survive. But nonetheless, we take what we can, what we see and what we have, and try to mindfully and consciously make decisions about what's valuable to me.
I'm curious about whether giving up control, because everything is so unpredictable right now, is a form of relief for some of us, where it's like, you know what? I can't control everything. Just got to go with the flow.
Yeah. Yeah. A friend of mine who's a counselor told me that she's having clients make lists of what is within my control and what is not within my control. And the things that are not within my control, why, ask yourself consciously, why do I spend time trying to pretend I can do anything about those things, right? I cannot bring this person back. I cannot revive a relationship that is long dead. I cannot, you know, get back to maybe fit back into my my pants again. Some things that I have more control over or not. And what am I going to put my attention and my energy into going forward should really be the things that I feel that I do have control over. And I mean, I really honor and respect those who have just done an amazing job in saying, making these big decisions and saying, this job is not something that is important to me. This job is not the way I want to spend 40 or 50 hours of my life going forward. I'm going to try something new. Sometimes that's a big risk to take, but I really honor and respect those who have made that decision. Those who have said this relationship does nothing to help me. And it's a constant struggle of me trying to please somebody who's not pleasable. And I don't need to go forward with this relationship. I have nothing but honor and respect for those who are brave enough to say that, to see that, and to move forward in the things that one can control. I think that's inspirational to me.
Definitely. Yeah. Just being able to let go of things. We have about a minute left here. What would you say is your favorite thing that has come out of all of this?
Well, I will, for me personally, I will say that I lived many years in fear of teaching online, of learning new technology. I was too old for that. I can't do that now. And it really made the people who manage these sorts of things realize that it's not just technology and the connections we make through technology is not just for the TikTok generation, although, you know, all props to the TikTok generation. But there are others of us who have learned how to use technology for our own purposes. And I am proud of myself for having learned to do that. I feel it makes me a lot more versatile. I can meet with anyone, anytime kind of thing. I've enjoyed that a lot. And it's done a lot for my confidence, saying, well, I'm not too old to learn new tricks. And I think that's the case for a lot of folks. A lot of grandparents are, you know, video chatting with their grandkids on a regular basis. And that's been a boon. So I think that's one of the really positive things. That together with putting focus, mindfulness, attention, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, on the few things that really matter in life. I'm not alone there. I think for many of us, we have reevaluated how I spend my days, who I speak to, what do I do when I have that downtime. And I think that's been really a positive for me.
Well, thank you so much, Kathy Borshuk, professor of psychology at Indiana University, South Bend. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.